Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On track one, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from current research data, the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Distance Education Program, and his clinical experience. On track two, he will be joined by Tracy Holly on He Said, She Said for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track three features an interview with our special guest who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Now, here is Corey Holly and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello everyone and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, April 2005. Last month I discussed several principles on the topic of weight management. Management of body composition is clearly an issue of desire, self-determination, and discipline. Many factors determine the outcome of our physical form and shape, and the good news is that over time, with the right approach and correct mental attitude, it is possible to alter our course and have control over every variable that determines how our genetic hardware is expressed in real time. The title of this month's commentary is The Chemistry of Insulin. Insulin is a polypeptide hormone that promotes glucose utilization, protein synthesis, and the formation and storage of lipids. Produced by specialized endocrine glands of the pancreas called the islets of Langerhans, insulin was discovered in 1921 by two Canadian researchers, Dr. Frederick Banting and his medical assistant, Charles Best. The average human pancreas stores about 200 units of insulin and secretes between 25 to 30 units daily into the circulation. When plasma glucose rises after eating carbohydrates, insulin release is stimulated. After plasma glucose falls, insulin secretion is reduced. During periods of prolonged fasting, insulin levels in a normal, healthy person should stabilize. Insulin prevents sugar from rising too high, and its antagonist hormone, glucagon, prevents blood sugar from falling too low. This team effort of regulation, response, and compensation to the internal environment dictated by messages in the blood helps ensure glucose homeostasis and the regulation of nutrient metabolism and storage. Insulin is crucial to the transport of glucose and amino acids into muscle cells. Properly managed by the right diet, insulin is the athlete's best friend because it plays an enormous role in muscle hypertrophy. With the support of human growth hormone, it has a direct effect on the production of somatomedins in the liver. Somatomedins are also known as insulin-like growth factors, or more commonly, IGF. For these reasons, insulin has earned the reputation of an anabolic hormone. However, insulin is a two-edged sword. It is also the hormone of feasting and plenty, and depending on what is eaten and when, insulin can function as a brilliant fat storage hormone. When glycogen is oxidized and depleted through physical activity and exercise, skeletal muscle continues to depend on insulin for glucose delivery and transport. During intense exercise, the body can take in up to 30 times more glucose independent of insulin. In the recovery stage after exercise, insulin assists in the conversion of post-workout carbs to glycogen for muscle glycogen replenishment. Insulin is also instrumental to the process of protein delivery, as amino acids and nitrogen needed for muscle growth and repair require insulin for entry into muscle cells. Most amino acids and creatine enter muscle cells via a process called the sodium pump. Insulin speeds the action of this pump. Insulin binds to specific receptors on the surface of the muscle cell membrane and facilitates the entry of important fuel molecules needed to sustain heavy workouts. Although insulin responds directly to ingested sugars derived from a variety of natural and refined carbohydrates, amino acids also stimulate its release, although to a much lesser degree. Arginine and lysine have the greatest insulinogenic effect, followed by leucine, phenylalanine, valine, and methionine. Ingested fats have virtually no effect on insulin, although insulin has a great effect on them. Our ability to respond to insulin is called insulin tolerance. The more tolerance a person has for insulin, the more insulin it takes to get a response. A low tolerance to insulin is preferable, as excessive insulin production is associated with obesity, high cholesterol, high triglycerides, hypertension, vascular disease, fatigue, and adult onset type 2 diabetes. Many overweight individuals have excess insulin in their blood due to excessive stimulation of the pancreas. This condition is called hyperinsulinemia. The hallmark of syndrome X is resistance to insulin, which many experts claim is caused by eating too many processed high-carbohydrate foods such as breads, pastas, and sweets that create an excess of glucose and cell-destroying free radicals. That's right. Excess glucose, excess carbs, excess sugar, they all create free radicals in the blood, and they cause damage to the cells, neurons in the brain. They harden your arteries, and they cause damage to your ovaries, your testes, your liver, your vital organs. So you really got to keep that white sugar down. Syndrome X, coined in 1988 by Dr. Gerald Reaven, a Stanford University endocrinologist, is defined by a cluster of related symptoms that always includes insulin resistance and one or more of the following conditions: abnormal blood fats, elevated uric acid, reduced HDL, that's the so-called good cholesterol, increased oxidized LDL particles, the so-called bad cholesterol, overweight and high blood pressure. You often see a lot of excess body fat, and that connection is synonymous with syndrome X. Insulin resistance involves the release by the pancreas of more insulin than the target cells in the body can handle. Excess carbohydrate intake in the form of sugar, bread, pasta, bagels, chips, cookies, breakfast cereals, etc., the list goes on and on and on, cause blood glucose levels to rise excessively, and in response, the pancreas releases more and more insulin. Eventually, the cell receptors of muscle and vital organs become saturated, non-responsive, and may even shut down. Then, glucose and insulin begin to accumulate to toxic levels in the bloodstream, becoming agents of hostility and damage. Clotting factors are activated, and advanced glycation end products, or AGEs, begin to form. It is estimated that as many as 25 to 30% of North American adults have syndrome X. Lack of sleep depresses growth hormone release, slows muscle and strength gains, and negatively influences immune function. Insomnia and sleep deprivation also cause insulin resistance, which promotes intra-abdominal obesity. This translates to that dreaded spare tire around the gut, which happens to be the most dangerous area to store excess body fat in terms of disease risk for the body, especially heart disease in men. Ideally, we don't want to constantly flood the body with high glycemic, low fiber, low water volume carbohydrates such as sugar and white flour, as this causes insulin to spike. It's much better to consume carbohydrates that are metabolized slowly and that release the sugars over a long period of time. Brussels sprouts and yams, for example, are a much better alternative. This keeps glucose and insulin closer to a normal fasting baseline for a good anabolic effect, not too high, not too low. Insulin suppression reduces testosterone levels, impairs strength, and limits performance, whereas high levels increase risk of disease and obesity. So as always, nutrition balance is the key. This is what Barry Sears tried to get across in his book, The Zone, keeping insulin, the chemistry of insulin in the zone, and that's relative to what we eat and when we eat. Nutrients that optimize insulin activity, improve its sensitivity, and protect it, and the pancreas from oxidative damage, include B6, niacin, magnesium, chromium, vanadium, alpha-lipoic acid, vitamin C, and the omega-3 fatty acids, including alpha-linolenic acid, that's the omega-3 parent omega-3, eicosapentaenoic acid, EPA, and docosahexaenoic acid, or DHA. These omega-3 fats are very, very important. Insulin has a direct effect on the metabolism and storage of fat. For instance, insulin accelerates the transport of glucose from the blood into cells and the conversion of glucose into fatty acids. This is called lipogenesis. Insulin has a greater half-life than glucose, so any insulin left circulating in the blood after it has completed its work is also converted into fat. And the effect is even more reliable if by genetic predisposition you have a slow metabolic rate and spend most of your free or work time in a seated position. If levels of insulin climb too high, which can happen simply by eating a large meal or a meal dominated by carbs such as bread, rice, or pasta, a simultaneous increase in the enzymes lipoprotein lipase and acetyl-CoA carboxylase occurs. Both of these enzymes facilitate the transport of fatty acids into fat cells. High insulin levels activate lipoprotein lipase and increase its activity. Females typically have higher lipoprotein lipase levels than males at baseline. Sorry, ladies, but that's just the way it is. Lipoprotein lipase, or LPL, promotes the removal of triglycerides from the bloodstream and encourages their deposition into adipocytes, which are also called fat cells. Insulin also inhibits the action of hormone-sensitive lipase, which breaks down stored fats for use as energy. So anytime you catch yourself eyeing a muffin or a slice of bread, focus for a moment in advance of the indulgence. Think of what effect it will have on your blood chemistry and body composition. Remember, insulin inhibits the mobilization of stored fat when it's released into the blood. If insulin levels are continuously sustained above baseline throughout the day, enzymes like LPL can suppress the oxidation of fatty acids even while consuming a negative calorie intake combined with exercise. This is called an anti-lipolytic effect. While the caloric profile of food is a factor in weight management, the chemistry of food is much more important to understand. The irony of this is that few people really get this concept or even think about it. And for those that do, I call that getting the connection. Once you get the connection, you can control your body composition like flicking a light switch on or off. You can design a diet that fits you personally, just like a glove. However, knowing is not enough. To get the results most of us want means you have to do the work and eat with discipline, purpose, and foresight. The field must be plowed before the seed can be planted. The work always precedes the benefit. I've observed what I refer to as a bizarre effect of nutrition on thousands of people for years in gyms all over the world. They train their hearts out and underconsume food, but they eat the wrong kind of food, drink hardly any water, take no supplements, become micronutrient and antioxidant deficient, and in the end, they lose muscle and crash from the fatigue. And the worst part is that after they fail, most of them still don't get it. They don't understand how powerful food is, that food is a complex mix of chemicals, and how even the smallest amount of the wrong food can foul up their entire chemistry and sabotage all of their hard work in the gym. This is what I mean by bridging the gap between fitness and nutrition. It's really coming to terms and understanding that you need to eat with excellence and eat as hard as you train. And it works both ways. For everyone out there that's engaged in training, you got to focus on high quality food. The two go hand in hand. Neither one is more important than the other. Chronic insulin elevation occurs as a result of consuming a diet high in refined carbohydrates, things like buns, bagels, muffins, pasta, bread, and sucrose, and expending little or no energy through physical exercise. But many people who do not lack the exercise component still don't get the results they want. Muscle contraction is the essence behind all movement, and muscles require energy. High levels of insulin are brought down by forcing the body to consume blood glucose as fuel. As glucose levels decrease, insulin levels also decrease. However, the diet must be right or you'll continue to struggle against a chemistry set in motion by the food you're eating, no matter how active you are. To turn things around, you have to train correctly and improve the quality of the carbohydrates you ingest. Good foods, good carbs include leafy greens, raw vegetables, fresh berries, and whole, fibrous, black, dark grains. Then you must learn how to modify their overall daily intake, knowing when to eat them and when to reduce them. Eventually, you start thinking in terms of glycemic index, carbohydrate density, fiber content, water volume, and pH balance. Now you're getting the connection. This is a logical way to employ the use of food, and it really works. This is what I call the science of living well. It's thinking first, applying the action that you've given thought to, and it's sound, it's functional, it's logical. Raising protein and essential fatty acid intake to optimum levels is also very important. In fact, protein, high quality, non-denatured protein, is the anchor that provides stability to every meal. As insulin falls to normal or ideal levels, the release of fatty acids accelerates and stored body fat declines. More on this topic in our next month's edition. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from Dr. Michael Colgan, our special guest on next month's anniversary edition. If you have no time for complete and balanced nutrition, you better reserve a lot of time for illness.